Hi, it's Michael Sullivan from Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. And today we're in the kitchen testing canned tomatoes.
Tasting form, sweetness, acidity, definitely the color, the texture.
These tomatoes, they're pretty velvety, like they break apart easily with a spoon.
The guides that we write are living, breathing things.
It's a piece of fruit in a can, so it's gonna change every year. At Wirecutter, we do the work so you don't have to. For independent product reviews and recommendations for the real world, come visit us at nytimes.com/wirecutter.
Where were you when this album came out? What was life like? What was Jay-Z like?
I'm sorry. I had to get in the mood.
It's all you.
It's heavy, you know? It's heavy. Welcome to the New York Times podcast. You're, no question, John C. Got Too Many Answers of Weekly Culture Chat. I'm John Caramonica. I'm the critic.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm the reporter. And for the purposes of this podcast, a Jay-Z fan since age 12.
So rude. Such a rude way to
Look,
start.
This is going to be a lore-filled podcast.
Fine.
A lore-filled podcast for both us and Jay-Z's career.
Jay-Z is on the verge of playing multiple nights at Yankee Stadium. First night devoted to Reasonable Doubt. Second night devoted to Blueprint. Third night devoted to Ephemera.
Anything else.
Whatever you might want.
Although, having been to the last Jay-Z Deep Cuts and B-Sides concert, like, that's the actual answer to all of this, which is you could go celebrate the 30th anniversary of Reasonable Doubt on night one. You could go celebrate the 25th anniversary of The Blueprint on night two. But if you were a real Jay-Z head, what you want to see is all of the Deep Cuts. And watching him not only know, but live inside of the songs that he wrote however many decades ago and maybe never played since or never played at all, like, that's for the real heads. But here we are. We're arguing the two, I would say, biggest and best Jay-Z albums against one another.
I would agree. I will be speaking on behalf of Reasonable Doubt.
And I, on The Blueprint.
Oh, I thought you were taking Magna Carta Holy Grail.
Sorry. We're going to do...
I didn't prep
We're
going to
do Magna Carta versus Kingdom Come. Yeah. I'm calling Kingdom Come right now from before we start.
So what we're going to do is we're going to go through opening arguments for each album. We have categories of different high points, maybe a couple of low points on each album. And I'm going to emerge victorious, which is going to be great.
But you're going to decide. Listeners, viewers, commenters, get in there. Tell us who was right and who argued better, even if you come in thinking, of course, it's Reasonable Doubt, the classic first Jay-Z album. John's making faces at the camera. We're actually not going to show any of them.
No, we're going to split screen. Say whatever you want.
But get in our comments, in our DMs if you have to. Popcast.
Very perverse invitation. Don't do that.
.com. All right, John, why don't you kick us off? Tell us why Reasonable Doubt is the best and most definitive Jay-Z album.
Sure.
Where were you when this album came out? What was life like? What was Jay-Z like?
I remember the Jay-Z singles, the Dead Presidents 2 single, the 12-inch, arriving.
Horseback? they came in.
That's how they delivered records in Florida. Up in the Northeast, we have the mail system. I used to play
where in the Northeast?
You know exactly where. WHRB FM 95.3. You know what it is. I remember playing those songs on my college radio show. I was sort of aware of Jay-Z. We had the Hawaiian Sophie single. My name is Jazz, and she did amaze me when she said the rapper get me and my partner Jay-Z. So I was like, I knew who that was, but I would say largely encountering him fresh. And I was encountering him less in his specific history than as a kind of continuation or potentially the completion of what was then the sort of holy triumvirate of New York rap, which is Nas, Biggie Smalls, and then eventually Jay-Z. Reasonable Doubt is often framed as an album that completes some kind of cycle. Illmatic, Ready to Die, Reasonable Doubt. The sort of long-running knock on Illmatic is it's kind of like narrated from afar. It's through the window. It's watching a thing happen. Ready to Die is a different kind of, I mean, it's hard to talk even remotely critically about Ready to Die, but it is the record that begins to engage with the compromises that hip hop was going to be really reckoning with throughout the 90s. Obviously, you have this in The Chronic to some degree, but by the time Ready to Die emerges, you're starting to think like, okay, is rap what it was in 1988 and 1989, or is it what it ended up being in 97, 98, 99? And Ready to Die is a real pivot point. There's a lot of restraint on Reasonable Doubt that suggests that what Biggie had done hadn't fully infiltrated what Jay-Z was doing. He would get to that. He would get to that with The Blueprint. He would get to that certainly with Volume 1 and Volume 2. But Reasonable Doubt, to me, still feels like an album born of precarity. It's comes from a place of not artistic uncertainty, but need. If you go back and look at the oral histories that were done about it, it's literally paid for with bags of cash. It's Jay-Z et al., fresh off the streets, in their financial district office, inventing a persona, inventing an independent label, inventing a path for entrepreneurship, storytelling, richness of narrative. All of that stuff is not fixed. And it certainly wasn't fixed from Jay-Z himself. I don't know if it's the beginning of the Reasonable Doubt era, but when you listen to the Big L Jay-Z freestyle from 1995 on Stretch and Bobbito, you hear the outlines of what's going to end up, I think, on Reasonable Doubt. MC's trying to be the best, and even in dying couldn't beat his death. To me, these are vivid, sometimes harrowing story raps that are occasionally salted with levity. But to me, it's the most complete Jay-Z album. It's the Jay-Z album that doesn't seem to be too terribly bothered with what anyone else might want from Jay-Z. There are very few external forces, certainly in the music world, weighing on him. Reasonable Doubt is not a guaranteed success. Reasonable Doubt is not a fait accompli. There is absolutely no certainty that this record is going to succeed. I remember, again, playing these songs on my college radio show, and there were shiny things happening just over the horizon. What Puffy was doing with Bad Boy was reframing the notion of what centrist New York rap could be. And then there's also much darker stuff coming out of the Mobb Deeps of the world and so on and so forth. Jay-Z is doing full-scale character work here. There's a sense that, is it a little too smart for the moment? And instead, it turned out to be the thing that set up 25, now 30 years of rappers imagining themselves as full-fledged heroes of their own narratives. I could talk about Reasonable Doubt for days. I won't. Could. But I won't. You have, a equal task of talking about The Blueprint. Also a very special album. Maybe a little less special.
I don't know about that. All right. Here's the thing. I think either of us could have been on either side of this debate.
That is true.
I think as a rap fan, Reasonable Doubt and Blueprint, both of these are probably in my top 10 or 15 rap albums of all time.
Sure.
If not my top 10 or 15 albums, period, of all time. A lot of this has to do with personal history for me. I was 13 when The Blueprint came out, September 2001. I was just getting into rap on a deeper label-based level, right? I was into Cash Money. Country Grammar had come out in the year 2000. Nelly, that was a huge pop crossover moment for kids in the suburbs getting into updated melodic gangster rap. And then The Blueprint comes out in the fall of 2001, and it was the culmination of everything you just talked about. Hard Knock Life had happened already. Big Pimpin' had happened already. These were songs and videos that I got into from MTV, from TRL. We didn't have rap radio like that in Central Florida in a way that I could tune into on a daily basis. But I was just getting into Napster and file sharing. And for me, what really made me a rap fan was the Jay-Z and Nas beef, because that not only allowed me to follow something, the soap opera of this, in real time, but it also allowed me to go backwards to the Biggie and Pac beef, which I had been slightly too young to experience in real time. So that was my history lesson. And this album is inextricable from two seismic events in hip hop and in the world, one being the Nas beef, two being 9/11. This album was released on September 11th, 2001. That gives it this mythic quality, and it makes it so you can't not remember the two things hand in hand, getting into Jay-Z and, you know, the loss of childlike innocence in some way for a lot of people who were in and around adolescence when all of this was happening. All of that said, the music on this album is just phenomenal. To me, it comes down to the voice, the beats, and the hits. Jay-Z is so much more himself on this album than he is on Reasonable Doubt, where he had this chip on his shoulder. He's overwriting, he's overrapping, he's wowing everyone, obviously. It's an extremely precocious, preternaturally advanced debut album that he'd spent his whole life leading up to, as he's talked about many times. And then the blueprint, he sounds comfortable. He exhales. He's doing crazy voice work. There's a line, you know, even on the first track on Ruler's Back, where he does the "Give me my bread" line. I'm too sexy for jail, like I'm right, said Fred. I'm not guilty, now give me back my bread. He's De Niro and Pacino in this, but in the 90s, not in the 70s, when they were trying to figure out who they were. He already knows. He's in his 30s by the time Blueprint comes out. He comes to fame a little later. And I think he just has a certain level of gravitas on this album, and it allows him to put himself in the lineage of rock, soul, R&B. And that's largely done through the work of Kanye West and Just Blaze, Bink and Timbaland also producing all over this album. But the way he's able to weave himself in that history, not only lyrically, you know, obviously shouting out Slick Rick, the Ruler's Back on the intro, you know, there's the crazy soul samples, there's Jackson 5 sample on H to the Izzo. There's the Doors on Takeover. Gonna win, yeah, we're taking over. Come on! Woo! ROC, you running this rap. I mean, even going from the second track, Takeover, to H to the Izzo, the third track, basically, you know, from the meanest, most... I'm so upset that he's bored Jay-Z to pure pop crossover Jay-Z, yeah, one after another. Like, to me, this album has both of those sides to it. It's the original Renaissance on Cowboy Carter for that family, mm-hmm, what he was doing in terms of weaving through the history of Black music, showing how even white music comes from Black music. Like, all of that is here in the margins, and all you have to do is listen carefully to Blueprint. So to me, Blueprint is the culmination of all of Jay-Z could become and would become.
Yeah. And before we get into our categories, I do think my age locates me in a different tradition of anxiety about hip hop crossover.
Sure.
And when you think about your Hard Knock Lives of the World, your H to the Izzo, it was like these kinds of very bright songs. Yeah. They weren't universally warmly received.
No, they were made fun of at the time.
Yeah, like they were pressure points, they were anxiety points, they were weaponized, I think, against Jay-Z, who obviously had a vision of what hip hop was intended to be over the next 10, 20, 25 years. And in many ways was saying, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make these records that may be lightly reviled or even more than lightly reviled in their moment, but they're going to solve a problem that has not yet been solved. And if anything, he ends up picking up the mantle that you heard in Ready to Die and you heard ultimately in Life After Death. Jay-Z becomes the person who picks that up and says, I'm going to carry it over the finish line, and in so remaking the entire genre and all of pop music.
And even his own people were skeptical of it at the time. There's a great XXL oral history of the Blueprint that I referred to a lot in researching for this episode. And Young Guru, who's Jay-Z's, you know, career-long engineer, says, I was mad at Izzo. When I first heard it, I was like, oh, Michael Jackson sample, this is kind of corny. And he says, like, Jay broke it down for me. He was like, this was the key to his success. This was nodding back to Hard Knock Life, which was his breakthrough single, like this unmistakable sample. And he's like, look, Guru, like, I know you just want me to rap. Like, I'm sure Guru wanted him to sound like he sounded on Reasonable Doubt.
Sure.
But he had a plan.
I also think something that's going to come up a lot today in this conversation, and I think is inextricable from Jay-Z now versus Jay-Z then versus Jay-Z in the beginning, are what is the plan? Is it an artistic plan, a creative plan, or is it a business plan? And is he a businessman? There are creative choices on the Blueprint that feel like successful business decisions. I think business decisions were embedded in Reasonable Doubt, but they didn't manifest necessarily in those creative ways. I think from sort of a New York rap purist, you could hold on to Reasonable Doubt and be like, this is us. This is what we came up on. Whereas by the time 5 years passes and you come to the Blueprint, that's really where the head scratching starts. You're like, damn, is he taking it somewhere too far away from where
it belongs to everyone? It belongs to kids like me in the suburbs.
Yes.
All right, John, let's hit our categories. We're going to start in the obvious place. What is the best track on Reasonable Doubt?
This is an unfair question. I played strategically, knowing all the categories here. I played strategically. I'm picking an answer that I know to be kind of wrong, but it has a lot of personal resonance for me. I'm picking 22 twos.
Okay. No question, Jay-Z got too many answers. I've been around this block too many
times. Rock too many rhymes, cop too many nines too. And I know all the old heads are out there watching and being like, I cannot believe this guy picked 22 twos over Brooklyn's Finest, over Dead Presidents too. I get it.
You're going to get to those songs.
Yeah, I'll find a path.
Sure.
I like to be dazzled. I've talked about seeking out like jolts of the new and other critical contexts. I like to be dazzled. And 22 twos is an incredible example of thematic, dazzling wordplay that comes off loose and calm and playful. Even on the album itself, he's on stage. He's at a club. It's Mad Wednesdays. He's getting introduced by the host. It's the notion that you could come up with something that playful, that free, but also intricate and very much in tune with the most lyrical rap that preceded it in an offhand way. It's kind of novel and unprecedented at the time. And the idea that you could just go on stage in a rowdy room with someone introducing you and say, hey, here's the mic, have at it, and then completely do a type of verse that it's like you think about the backpack rap of the 90s, you think about like Blackalicious, Alphabet, Acrobatics or whatever. It's like it's that kind of verse, but no one really talks about it like that kind of verse. And often in random moments, walking down the street, driving in the car, sitting in the office, taping podcast, I will just catch bars from 22 twos popping into my head. And it's not that there are not incredible songs. There's probably better songs, qua song. But in terms of like things that bring me joy, very little does like 22 twos. All right, Joe, I hate to say this, but I think you actually had a harder task than I had. Because when I look at the Blueprint track list, I mean, I'll be honest, I was feeling sad a little bit about it this weekend because I know every song you have to choose from. What is the best song on the Blueprint.
So for my money, tracks 6 through 10 is as strong of a run on any rap album ever. That's You Don't Know, Hola Ovito, which is controversial, but I'll get back to that one. Heart of the City, Ain't No Love, Never Change, and Song Cry. Like, as a five-song run, that's just bonkers.
Yeah.
And
it has range.
Range. It's everything you could want out of the genre. So I'm just starting at the beginning. You Don't Know. I've often said, is the song, if there was an alien invasion and the little green men came down to our planet and they ended up in this studio and they said, Joe, what is rap music? Like, You Don't Know is probably the song that I would play them. I sell ice in the winter. I sell fire in hell. I am a hustler, baby. I sell water to a well. This is Just Blaze building around the sample of Bobby Bird's I'm Not to Blame. It's Jay at his most majestic. It's public service announcement before public service announcement. You know, it's like, it's all of the grandeur that comes later on the Black Album. But as he was discovering it in real time.
It's a headbanger.
Yeah.
It's like an actual headbanger.
I could have gone with Heart of the City. Because I think it has a similar epic quality to it. First the fat boys break up. Now every day I wake up. Somebody got a problem with hope. But this just feels like definitive Jay-Z. It's him at his best, and it's him at his best right as he knows he's becoming the best.
Yeah.
There's just something about the scale of it, the beauty, the lushness of the production. I just really felt like he was ascending to a level that really no rapper had ever been to before.
If I could just add one thing on You Don't Know, it's every now and again, someone in a genre, in a framework of limited context will try a thing that is out of that limited context and immediately make it clear that the context of the original thing was too narrow. That's very much how I feel about it. You know, when I remember first hearing it and be like, we're allowed to do this?
Yeah.
You could do this?
Right.
You could do this.
And
crazy.
This is why I mentioned classic rock at the beginning, but this is Jay-Z realizing he could be classic rock. We listened to the beginning of 22s. I think we should listen to the beginning of You Don't Know. When he goes from the Take My Music Higher intro into, you know, a tight little first couple of lines that are like exactly his whole life story and career in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. So such succinct economical writing. So let's just listen to that. You don't know what you're doing. Sure I do. I'm from the streets where the hood swallow on me. Bullets are following me. There's so much coke that you could run the slalom. And to me, that's not even the best bars or verse on the album.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of us.
It's skipping. This, but it's also that.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of us and also skipping over stuff. It's like we could just sit here all day and go line for line and talk about how incredible lines are. So, like, obviously hash it out in the comments. Like, we'll leave stuff out. I'm not proud of this stuff. I'm proud of what I'm including, but I'm also not proud of what I'm leaving out.
So that's our next category. John, what is the best bar or verse from Reasonable Doubt?
I mean, it's... Can I answer both?
You're going to do a single bar and then some verses?
Sort of.
Sure, go ahead. Whatever you need.
Best bar? Look in his casket, feeling sarcastic. Look at him, still sleeping. I weep. I weep at the wit. I weep at the savagery. I weep at the... Dog, it's just funny as hell. It's just hilarious. It's a literally funny line about... You're up dying. It's terrible. Yeah, no, it's just terrible. It's terrible. It's like a terrible but also incredibly rich line.
It's the meme. It's the guy at the funeral meme.
Yes,
before,
that's the thing. This was originally in my lore category specifically for how it sets up the Big Fendi meme, which is also top five memes of all time. There's 100 best bars. That's the one that stuck with me. Best verse. This is where I struggled with what to do with the evils. I moved it down to this category because there's just some magically vile stuff going on The Evils. Kidnapping the partner of your enemy who used to be your friend. Start feeding your money till her shit started making sense. Like, just, it's just, it's unbelievable.
It's really big. It's so big. It's so biggy. It's like, so, that
it's
storytelling.
But as I was listening to this album a bunch over the weekend, I kept coming back to Friend or Foe. And Friend or Foe is not the fullest song on this record. It's not even 2 minutes. It's a verse and change. Friend or Foe is fascinating. It's an address. It opens up with the kind of third party being like, oh, no, what, the Jay-Z says I can't get money? No, some rapper saying I can't get money? No. And then the song is basically like the, let me stop you right there.
Look, it's out of my hands. And you getting money around here, it's not in the plans. Don't hop your ass out of that van, head back to Kansas. I'm sitting
so conversational. It's an immaculate representation of his skill as constructor of narrative in an unflashy way. And even within the rapping, within the space of four lines, he'll go from, I'm going to just talk to you right here. It's just me and you, man. We're just talking. And then an incredibly ornate series of lines. And then he's back to talking. And then he's back to the ornate flows. And then he's back to talking. And this is all happening in like 80 seconds. It's so emotionally savage. It feels clearly rooted in true experience. You really get the kind of anxiety of coming out of the drug game, the anxiety of the streets, and Jay being the person who's like, I am both triumphing over that, but don't come too close. My guys, they're a little skittish. They might not take kindly to that.
You're twitching. Do that. You're making me nervous. My crew, well, they do pack. Them dudes is murderers. So please, would you put your hand back in sight?
There is this looming threat that's still there underpinning this album. That looming threat's not there on The Blueprint. It's not there on Volume 2. Certainly not there on 444, you know? But it is still there on this. It's so beautiful. And also the horns on this, the... Just they're kind of like pressing. I almost imagine if you're on the receiving end of the Friend or Foe verse, it's like the horns are like pushing you back. Every time it bleats, it like gets you like a little bit more on the back. Oh, you're on your heels all of a sudden. It's just such a tight, elegant, beautifully constructed, and totally casual. I think I ultimately came to admire between this and 22 Twos. The casualness of some of the best stuff on this record. So anyway, it's Friend or Foe. Tell me, best bar, best verse.
Yeah, look, the thing about The Blueprint is that there are lines, there are half bars even, one could say.
Oh yeah.
That you could live your whole life on.
Yeah.
Like, there are...
People talk about like one hit, one hit. Yeah, you'd be lucky to have one bar this good.
Yeah, like there's just little statements that, again... are like a guidebook for how to be in the world. And then just as many crazy one-liners. Do you think maybe ultimately the rapping, qua rapping, is better on Reasonable Doubt? It's certainly more intricate.
Yep.
He's trying harder to do things with rhyme schemes, but the songwriting on The Blueprint has both to me. I just want to read some of the bars. Sensitive thugs, y'all all need hugs. Like, just that. Do you dudes listen to music or do you just skim through it? Like, these are, again, these are like iconic lines. Boss 92 Bricks had to fall back, right? A story he refers to over and over again in his discography, but the way he mentions it on Never Change Here is incredible. I mean, so much stuff on Takeover. The way he's just dripping with disdain.
Oh, yeah.
Had a spark when you started, but now you're just garbage. Like, many such cases.
Mm-hmm.
Just read a magazine that fucked up my day from Renegade. Like, many such cases.
Yeah.
Again, you know? Reasonable Doubt, classic, should have went triple. Like, the easiest, quickest way to just be like, oh, that other album, underrated.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just unbelievable stuff. Okay, but my actual answer,
okay,
which again, we're just fudging these answers all the way.
Yeah.
the second into the third verse of Hola Ovito, to me, does the best trick, because the end of the second verse is the Sambui verse. And with the third pick, I made the earth sick. MJ, fade away, perfect. And he does a reasonable doubt flow there for the end of that verse. I'm a 88 or 96, a reasonable doubt. He starts doing the multisyllabic stuff. Then the chorus comes. And then, to me, the third verse and what makes Blueprint work so well is he slows down. He exhales and he does the motherfuckers verse.
Nah, motherfuckers. Y'all motherfuckers better run in the post office and get a job, motherfuckers.
Rhyming motherfucker with motherfucker over and over and Cameron over again.
Cameron didn't invent that. So I love Cameron, but that's, you know.
And then he says, I'm Michael Magic and Bird, all rolled in one. You know, and the way he's doing this sort of like start and stop piecemeal flow.
Yep.
If I am better than big, I'm the closest one. Just all of that, the way he sort of is like, I can do all of the super intricate, elaborate stuff. And then I can just like pepper you with little phrases, little bars.
Yep.
And all of it hits equally hard. Sometimes when I see this album debated, this is a 5-mic album from The Source, right? This is allegedly a perfect or almost perfect rap album. I find a lot of people say this is the skip. Which to me, that's insane. Like, this is a banger.
It is. I my feeling is like the hook's weird. It's a strange hook.
Sure.
And I think,
but it's produced so well. It's so thick.
Right. I think this is maybe the one song on that record where people are like, well, I don't know about that hook. Like, that hook doesn't feel.
Okay. But I have a different answer. This brings us to our next category, which is, what is the actual skip on Reasonable Doubt, if there is one? What's the worst track?
Can I apologize to Memphis Bleak? Jay-Z's trying to build a world, right? It's like, I'm on top. I'm fresh out the game. I'm new in the rap game, but I'm not new. Been around. I've had cars. Still spending money since 88, you know, from money from 88, et cetera, et cetera. And coming of age is this kind of back and forth with a young talent, a rookie, or a pre-rookie even. And there's this back and forth. I assume Jay wrote a bunch of Bleak bars.
No, rappers don't do that.
To be fair, I didn't do the Googles on it, but I'm pretty sure that Jay wrote a bunch of Bleak's bars. Memphis Bleak is not a sophisticated deliverer of words. And even a great Jay-Z bar coming from someone who doesn't quite bend the words right comes off clunky. And there's this kind of like ping pongy thing happening.
I like your style.
Nah, I like your style.
Let's drive around the web.
It's a tonal brightness that feels out of step with the rest of the album. So to me, it's probably a skip.
I do think side B of Reasonable Doubt is a little uneven. Mm-hmm. And I think that that ultimately is what makes Blueprint the better, more classic album, even if there's so much interesting and important stuff happening here.
It's perfunctory.
Which also brings me to my pick of the worst song on the Blueprint, which I also feel is perfunctory, but in a much different way. I'm not going to say Girls, 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 which I think a lot of people would want me to say, because I actually think that that song is incredible stand-up comedy in that everybody gets it equally. You know, it's like, it's offensive, but in a all-purpose way.
Okay.
And it's extremely catchy. That's like the consensus pick.
Sure.
Which is that it hasn't aged well or whatever. But when I talk about Jay putting himself in a black musical lineage here and specifically shouting out R&B, soul, and rappers who maybe never got their proper due, whether financially or critically or otherwise, having Biz Markie, Slick Rick, and Q-Tip trade the uncredited hooks of Girls, Girls, Girls just to me makes that song
loves rap
worth having.
Jay-Z loves rap. It's not there are a lot of rappers who don't really seem to like a lot of older rap music. Jay-Z loves rap, an actual student.
But the answer is the next track, track 5, Jigga, which is
wow.
It's a club record. It is the only song here that feels like it's here because he or his friends or the label said like, these soul samples are cool. Like, again, this is the album that births the Kanye sound, essentially. This is the album where Just Blaze and Kanye create this rich palette for Jay-Z to rap over that then leads to 5, 10, 15 years of sped up soul samples as the basis of rap. They're not the first people to ever do it, but this is where it was minted. And I think at the time that felt risky. It was like, whoa, there's a lot of guitars on this album. You know, like, let's do a song that will definitely play in clubs because we don't want to give up the audience that you've built for yourself in between, on the albums between Reasonable Doubt and Blueprint. And to me, Jigga's just out of place. It just doesn't belong to this album sonically or lyrically or in terms of mind state. It doesn't have the timeless quality that I think a lot of these songs do.
Interesting. If there is a song that should have been a mixtape exclusive, not necessarily in sync with the rest of the album, it's Renegade. I understand why it exists. I even think it's a pretty good song. For a song that's not trying to be kind of like a great song.
It doesn't go with this album.
I mean, you're coming off of 7 or 8 fully formed, complete thoughts, fully composed records. Then you get Renegade. Renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day. And I think Jay welcoming M is both an overture to Eminem fans, who are an entirely new category of rap fan. It's also a bit of a like, I'm out rap this
and
like,
yes,
I'm out rap this
and
guy.
It's, I think it's worth saying, like, this song did not start from these sessions. This is an Eminem produced song. Like, M sent him, that they were not in the studio together. Eminem was recording in Detroit or whatever. Jay was at Baseline and other New York studios. Like, this was not a song that came out of the Blueprint sessions. And I think one of the reasons Blueprint is the most cohesive Jay-Z album is that it was all coming
in
from people
room,
working simultaneously in multiple rooms.
Right,
which,
but in multiple rooms in the same studio.
Sorry. But all together, yes. And this is an outlier. I think we both agree. This has already been disproven over and over again. M did not murder Jay on Renegade. Like, Jay-Z's rapping is better than Eminem's rapping on
Yeah,
it.
And again,
it just
it's
we agree on that, right?
It's
This has been a narrative since I was a child.
Right, but it also really goes to, I think people really struggle to reckon with Eminem because he was so popular so quickly, so evidently talented, under the tutelage of Dr. Dre, was making these kind of like indelible pop hits, and it brought a lot of people into the conversation who had never been in the conversation before. I think if you haven't heard Reasonable Doubt, you may not know how to hear Jay-Z on this record, and maybe certainly not on Renegade specifically. And if what you showed up to the Blueprint for is to listen to Eminem, then yeah, you're going to think that he ran circles around Jay. But Eminem is an antic rapper. Jay-Z is not an antic rapper. So just because Eminem is calling attention to himself doesn't mean that Jay-Z's not watching him.
Hi, I'm Megan Loram, the director of photography at the New York Times. A photograph can do a lot of different things. It can connect us. It can bring us to places we've never been before. It can capture a story in a universal visual language. But one thing that all these photographs have in common is that, you know, they don't just come out of the ether. We spend a lot of time anticipating news stories, working with the best photographers across the globe. These are photographers who have spent years mastering their technical craft, developing their skills as visual chroniclers of our world. You know, getting certified as a scuba diver and learning how to shoot underwater to document climate change, or tremendous cardiovascular training in order to ski on the slopes next to Olympic athletes. This is an effort that takes tons of time and consideration and resources. All of this is possible only because of New York Times subscribers. If you're not a subscriber yet, you can become one at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Our next category, who is the MVP of Reasonable Doubt that's not Jay-Z? Who's the best producer or collaborator on this album?
I wish there wasn't such an obvious answer for this, because there are multiple. You have Ski, the producer, giving Jay-Z the whole Camp Lo sound before the Camp Lo record came out. You have Pain in the Ass, who is just an incredible presence and, you know, pops up every now and again. I think he was at the anniversary concert at Radio City. I will say one of the most ecstatic concert going moments of my entire life. Before Jay ever comes on stage, the Lexus drives out on stage. They lost their mind. This man drove a Lexus out on the Radio City Music Hall stage. The exact correct Lexus, the exact correct trim package, like the whole thing. It was a spectacle. This was like, people weren't doing this now.
Right. And now, like, every show.
Yeah, you have like 30 cars on stage. Like, nobody thinks about it. You know, 30 cars flying over your head at a concert. At that time, at Radio City, where these kind of like vaunted venues, like, were not hosting rap shows like that. Just an unbelievable moment. Anyway, Pain in the Ass, I'm pretty sure, was there as well. But there is only one answer, and that's Biggie Smalls. Brooklyn's Finest is, for me, could have been the answer to any of these questions, any of these categories.
You're saving it for this category.
Yeah. It is a it's a load-bearing song in my personal history. Marcy, I'm Varsity Champ, you're JV. Jay-Z. My bet style flows malicious. Delicious. And I went back and read the oral histories around the making of this album. Shout out producer Kate for pulling all the deep internet links. And I guess one thing that I had never fully registered is that these verses were done at different times. And they're not full verses. There's like eight bars, maybe a 16 and a 16. They sound like they are literally recorded right here. Just two people in mics, like, daring each other to outdo each other. Brooklyn's Finest is such a joyful record from two people who felt like they had maybe met their, I mean, I don't want to be so bold as to say best friend, but certainly the contemporary that would keep them on their toes. Brooklyn's Finest is the World Series. Like, Brooklyn's Finest is, there is absolute mutual respect. It's two people who understand how good the other person is and is basically rapping to the other with pure joy. May I?
Go ahead.
Jeez, man. Pillowcase to your face, make the shell muffle. Shoot your daughter in the calf muscle. Tussle, nickel plated. Sprinkle coke on the floor, make it drug related. And then Jay follows.
So silly.
The follow? While y'all pump Willie, I'll run up and stunt silly. Scared, so you sent your little mans to come kill me. But on the contrary, I packs the Mac Millie, squeeze off on him. The paramedics breathing soft on him. What's your name? Dog.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest rap songs of all time.
It is.
Full stop.
It is unbelievable. And it's truly like a bodybuilding competition. You know, like in bodybuilding where like two people they're doing a pose off. They're doing a pose off. Every four lines, they're doing a pose off. It is unbelievable. This song can take me out of the deepest funk. I could be in the worst mood. I could be in the angriest mood. I could be sad. I could be heartbroken. If you put this song on, especially in the car, I could fight an elephant. Anyway, rest in peace, Biggie Smalls. What about you?
All right.
I mean, you can't top that. No, like, whatever. You can't,
like,
top
it's
that.
Fine. It's fine. Like, yeah. Biggie and Jay, that's the one, right? That's
it's the Nate Plu Ultra. It's like, you can't, that's it.
I want to say Jim Morrison of The Doors. Kanye samples 5-1 on Takeover. I'm not going to say Jim Morrison, but
thank God.
KRS-One also sampled on Takeover.
Yeah.
Sound of the Police.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. The dude from Saliva.
Oh, yeah. Joe Scott, I interviewed him.
About this?
I think
so. Or about
so.
Saliva?
No, I think both. I think it was the Saliva album that came out after this.
Because I'm not using this in our next category, I'm using it here, which is he's the one saying fame and lame, interpolating David Bowie's fame.
Weird.
To make fun of
weird
Nas.
Roots.
The guy from Saliva is on one of the most important diss tracks in rap history. That's three collaborators just on Takeover that I could say, but I'm going to do the umbrella thing and I'm going to say it's a tie between Kanye West and Just Blaze. Like, Kanye West and Just Blaze made a sound in this XXL oral history I was talking about. They have Jay talking about pitting them against each other.
Yeah.
He says, I had two rooms at Baseline. This was Studio Manhattan. It was a big room that I was in that I'd record, and then there was a small room, and Just would be doing beats in one room. Just would peep his head in and hear what me and Kanye was doing and would just go back mad. Like, he would go pound his fists on the table and come in and be like, yo. He was like, every day it was a heavyweight slugfest. For 3 days, they were just knocking each other out. They were just going back and forth trying to one-up each other. Like, mm-hmm. Look, kids, like, you can't get this on the internet. You know what I mean? Like, you just can't get this when you're collaborating from thousands of miles apart. Like, these were guys trying to get to the top of the mountain on each other's.
Crawling on top of each other to get. Yeah.
So the fact that they were both, the fact that they were dueling to create these beats and the results are Heart of the City, Never Change, Song Cry. Like
that's the Jay and Biggie of that record. Yes. The Jay and Biggie of that record is not Jay and another rapper.
It's Justin Ye.
It's Justin Ye.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, this is their album as much as it's Jay's album.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
All right, John. We're getting to the end. Feel like this category had to be in here. What is the best lore or era marker around Reasonable Doubt?
Yeah, you know, I alluded to it in the intro, the idea that this is an album literally paid for in bags of cash. It's a lot of great rap music been paid for.
Right, but Jay made the mythology around leaving the drug game for the rap game. He crystallized that.
Yeah, and it's like you see it even in the album cover. It's like you think about, I mean, this is an early Jonathan Mannion album cover. Jay-Z is not trying to present it as I'm still in the streets. Instead, he's got the opera scarf, he's got the rings, the cigar, fully leaned in to the character, the ascended character. But I think a lot about this album as a way station between moments in rap music. And we talked about it a tiny bit with Blueprint earlier, but there are lines on this album that are callbacks. There's the Can I Kick It part at the top of 22 Twos. There's obviously You Made It a Hot Line, I Made It a Hot Song. I'm out for presidents to represent me. And then there's Money Ain't a Thing, which then goes on to become some other thing and has a life of its own. It's, you talk about the sort of intertextuality of rap and rapping and great rappers, and Jay has always been a person to pull from things and then provide. And so I feel like I hear the changing moment in rap music through the lines that either had history or became history. It's not exactly like lore the way Bags of Cash is lore, but it's lore in the sense that it gave the next generation kind of a sacred text to pull from. And he wrote his sacred text by pulling from prior sacred texts. What about you?
So, again, I have two answers. This is so hard to boil
this
down.
This is hard. This is literally could be like a 10-hour live stream.
This is the thing that I read in this great XXL oral history.
Shout out XXL. First of all my people from XXL, we go back and get those old issues. We did a lot of work. We did a lot of archival work in the early to mid-2000s.
So this came out in 2009 when I must have read it in that very issue. And I've been quoting it ever since when people want to talk about why Jay is a great rapper and specifically why Jay not writing changed everything. And Guru tells a story about they're listening to the Heart of the City beat on loop, you know, 45 minutes, an hour. Jay's just sitting there thinking. And at the time, the Fiesta remix, Jay-Z and R. Kelly, was a different time.
Different time.
Was big. And it was like on the TV in the studio, the music video was playing. And Guru talks about how Jay goes into the booth and spits all the verses for Heart of the City and comes out and the Fiesta video is still playing on the TV. Which is just, you know, probably apocryphal, but like come on. Like, but that's not. Just like, sure. That's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah.
I need to believe it.
And it's like Muhammad Ali's friends probably told stories like that too. You know, like these are the kinds of stories that make Jay Jay.
Yeah.
You know what else makes Jay Jay? He brought Michael Jackson out at Summer Jam.
Incredible.
To promote this album.
Another sort of misunderstood thing. It's like people couldn't just, it was so brain fritzing. People couldn't decide whether it was the hardest thing that had ever happened or the softest thing that had ever happened.
And this is also where he premieres Takeover. So this is, you know, earlier in the summer, 2001, pre-9/11. Maybe June-ish, I think.
I would guess.
Jay only has the first two verses of Takeover, which are mostly aimed at Prodigy. He shows the picture of Prodigy as a childhood dancer, dressed as Michael Jackson, calls him a ballerina, puts it on the screen, and then brings out literal Michael Jackson. Like, and of course ends Takeover on a cliffhanger. Which is like, tell Nas.
Yeah.
You don't want it with Hov.
Yeah.
Like, and then later you get the Nas parts of this, which we've touched on. This is just like the level of disrespect.
It's 5D chess. Like,
yeah. And you're so high. I mean, again, we can talk about who won that battle. I'm someone who, as a 13-year-old at the time, the sheer audacity of Ether hit, right? Mm-hmm. But when you listen back to all these songs, especially when you factor in Blueprint 2 and whatever, you know, it's like, maybe we'll be reassessing other rap beefs down the line. Like, after the, you know, I'm just kidding.
No, you're not. You're not kidding. You're not kidding.
Anyway, you know what I mean. Just bringing out Michael Jackson is insane. And then to tie a bow on it all, Michael Jackson does uncredited guest vocals on Girls, Girls, Girls Part 2, which is like a bonus track on this album. It's just like, how did any of this happen? Like, if you weren't alive for this and you're going to watch the grainy YouTube, the VHS footage, like, it's just, you can't imagine how weird, how big of a flex this is.
Yeah. I mean, you can't touch it. Unbelievable.
All right. As we finish up, John, our last category, and then we'll eat a snack and we'll talk a little bit about what happens next for Jay. What is the most revealing detail on Reasonable Doubt? What's the thing that foreshadowed the Jay-Z to come?
Okay. I know that when we had mapped out these categories, I think that we had intended this category as potentially a positive one. What's the thing that lets us know that it's going up and that it's going to go for? And the more I was listening to the record, the more I kept returning to a song that we surprisingly have not yet spoken about. Ain't No, with Foxy Brown. In this song are contained all the contradictions of what's about to happen to rap music. And obviously this is an incredible record. Like, also Jay presumably wrote a bunch of Foxy. Sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, you know?
I would say in his greatest songwriters interview, he talks a lot about writing for other people.
I also love the posturing in this song. I love that it's Foxy who gets over on Jay. But it's interesting that as hip hop was going to head in more commercial territory, there was a wider purview on who could be fans and what they could be fans of, and introducing Foxy as a character, which then builds her career, obviously rising alongside Lil' Kim in the Notorious B.I.G. universe. It feels like an experiment that's maybe a slight concession. It's maybe a hint of, I don't know if I can keep doing these other 13 song types.
But isn't it better that way? Isn't Jay's career ultimately better because he was willing to make those concessions?
And of course, and this sets up everything that we now love about the Blueprint.
Right, like, you don't get Empire State of Mind without Foxy Brown on Reasonable Doubt.
That's the foreshadowing. When I look at all these songs, I will say that many of them feel very at home in 1996, but maybe not so at home in 1997 or 1998 or 1999. But when you listen to Ain't No, you're like, oh, that's the future.
As a great rapper once said, truthfully, I want to rhyme like Common Sense did 5 mil and he rhymed like Common Sense, you know? The cool thing is he narrated all of this from all mm-hmm. sides.
Yeah.
Like he was always
from within, from outside.
Two steps ahead, uh-huh. three steps back. Like he's all around it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That leads me to mine, which is from You Don't Know, which we talked about. 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, four. Let's just play those lines.
1 million, 2 million, 3 million, four. In 18 months, 80 million more.
He ends on the contradiction of Jay-Z. Put me anywhere on God's green earth, I'll triple my worth.
It's also how we feel about Popcast, for the record.
It's true.
Yeah.
John, let's eat a snack. We have a new DP on Popcast. His name is Bernardo. He went over to the snack closet as part of his hazing ritual, and he picked these Lay's. These are part of the Lay's summer suite of flavors. There's three flavors. This is the Argentinian-style steak with chimichurri. This is like a World Cup flavor. Let's break it in here. I'm not gonna spoil it for you.
Okay.
I think this is a draw. Let's be real. These albums are amazing.
Yeah.
I know it's not unfun. You know.
It's a little bit unfun to end at that conclusion, but I found myself wanting to argue your side as often as arguing my
side.
Yeah,
and I feel the same way.
Yeah.
But here's actually what I would say. If it came down to picking which Yankee Stadium show I wanted to see, while I think the Reasonable Doubt show will be more novel, the Blueprint show is going to be more lit.
I would probably agree, but I also think part of the reason is because it has more casuals.
Yeah, fine. But like,
more normies?
As somebody who has never been shy about loving hits, like I love smashes. I love things that everyone can participate in. These are so meaty.
Wow.
They really got the steak char on there. Mixed they got so the, I don't like
they
the
got,
chip.
They got the steak drip. It's like the drippings. Yep. They like ran a potato chip through the drippings on the plate.
It's an impressive chip, but I don't think it's a good chip. It tastes like eating ash. It's too much char.
Nah, I rock with this.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
See, I have half a bag in my cabinet at home because, and it's very unlike me, I could not finish.
Bring it to the kid. Bring it to the kid. I'll knock it out. I find the smell,
it's too accurate. They prize accuracy over eatability.
I understand that as a critique, but I do find the flavor, it's evenly distributed. It's nice. It's not a... There's no narrative. Sometimes we talk about with certain chips, it like starts in one place and then there's a middle note.
It's just a piece of steak.
Yeah, that's all it is.
I don't get enough chimichurri. That's part of what it is. I just taste the meat.
It is. No, you're wilding.
They're all yours.
No. I'm rocking these.
Before we go.
No, we'll just give it a score.
It's like a 4.5 for me. It's really low.
Actually bugging.
For a life. I'm just disappointed.
It's an 8, and the only reason it's not higher is because ultimately, forgive me, the Lay's company.
You just don't like Lay's.
I don't like Lay's.
That's nuts to me.
It is an inferior chip product.
There's a reason why it's synonymous with chip.
It's just too thin. It's just too thin. I want it to stand up for itself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It folds immediately. But you guys did a good job on this.
On our way out, Jay popped out ahead of the Yankee Stadium shows with an afro that took
new hair.
Reported 6 days to get out from his locks.
You think he did the new hairstyle in advance of going back to a baldy or like a maybe like a fade?
Well, but this is the thing. Speaking of lore, it's like real Jay fans know he grows his hair while he's working on an album, and then he cuts it when the album's done. He did the Roots picnic. He did the acapella freestyle where he throws shots at Drake, Nicki Minaj, Tory Lanez, Tony Busby, the lawyer who sued him for rape on behalf of a now discredited accuser. What did you make of this? And what do you think it portends for the rest of the summer after these Yankee Stadium shows?
Okay. So my initial reaction was, you're above this.
Like, leave the Iceman alone. Just
literally.
Let Drake have his little...
The most powerful thing you can do when someone takes a swipe at you does not respond.
You only get half a bar?
If that. I watched it and I felt like the part of the video that I found myself most charmed by were not any of the verses, not any of the bars, but the part where he's like almost like, I missed this shit.
Yeah,
like,
that's the thing. It's just him getting into shape. It's him getting into shape, which is why, combined with the hair, I'm just like, oh, I think we're going to get a J album this year. We don't have any information, to be clear, as of the filming of this episode. I got to think it's coming.
I would agree with that. But the freestyle itself, I was like, I get it.
It's a little clunky.
Yeah.
For Jay.
I get it. I understand why you did this, but also this is like potentially like me tapping you on the shoulder and saying, no need.
Fair enough.
We'll be at the shows.
And we'll be back here.
Are you going to be at all three? I want to be at all
three.
Find
out. Yeah.
Come find us. Tell us we're wrong.
Yeah.
Tell us we're right.
See you there. And we'll see you back here if and when a Jay-Z album comes out.
Every episode of Popcast is at nytimes.com/popcast. Most beautifully, we are on youtube.com/popcast, where you should like and subscribe for our suite of interviews, all our good friends on the wall, debate episodes like this, all kinds of chat, anything you might want. In condensed form, we are on Instagram and TikTok at Popcast. Credits and link in bio. We will be back next week.